When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
I've talked about a couple of the heroes of the inscrutable Dr. Bear in the case of the Two-Face statue. Now it's time to talk about some of the villains, and I'm going to get the whole cast out, because it's not a big cast in this book, but I want to talk about Wilhelmina. Wilhelmina, the horse in the story, who is the sidekick to our main villain or antagonist, Gallus Lugubrious. And what do I think about when I think about this character? Well, let's start with thinking about, why a sidekick at all. They're terrific characters in the fiction that I love. Like, I think of Shego from Kim Possible, who was the sidekick to, what was his name, Draken? But Shego was, like, the very powerful mercenary crony who wasn't at all into what Draken was into, just she was there for the job, right? And there was like a kind of a begrudging respect and affection for one another, but really a lot of hostility and antagonism between the two of them. And it was fun to watch that when that kind of those character sparks would happen. Well, you think back further, Beastman to Skeletor, there's your like really cliched version where it's the mean-spirited, verbally abusive villain treating his henchmen like trash, right? I think of the Batman television show from the 60s where all of the villains of the week had like, or it seemed like all of them had like three people in shirts with their names on the shirts, right? This week, the Joker's the villain. Well, Joker has three guys called, you know, Laugh, Guffaw, and Chortle, and they help him do his bidding. Or Otis to Lex Luthor in the Superman movies from the 80s, right? So what do I like about these characters? Well, I mean, there's a functional aspect to it, right? They give the villain someone to talk to for expositional purposes. Like, my sinister plan is almost complete. Who are they going to talk to about this? They're going to talk to the reader? Well, I don't want to break the fourth wall, so I'm going to have them talk to another character, and that will be their henchman or sidekick. But it's also an opportunity to explore character moments, right? Like, just what makes these people different? So I've got a villain and a henchman. How are these two characters different, and how can we explore how lovably loathsome our main antagonist is through the way he treats his sidekick? Or are there surprises in there? Like, I remember rewatching the Thundercats cartoon series, and Mumra, the big scary mummy villain of the series, who, you know, roars with scary laughter as he flies through the air and treats the mutants like absolute trash. He gets a dog in the second or third season or whatever, and like he loves his dog, right? And I love this idea of like the villain having somebody to care about. You know, it again. For me, the kind of fiction that I enjoy writing and the kind of fiction I enjoy consuming in a casual way, which is like kids' media, I like it when the villains have something that makes them lovably loathsome, not just somebody to outright hate. Although, when I get to talking about Gallus, there is a lot to dislike about that guy. So, specifically about Wilhelmina, like how did I want to play her different? What did I want to bring that would feel like it was a little bit more mine to like this type of character? And I thought, okay, it really began with, and this is where I want to end. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. It really began with like, can I make a horse that's a barbarian, right? And really keep it not like is. Don't anthropomorphize it too much, like have her actually function like a horse. I'll get to that later. But it began with like a fearsome looking horse. And I really didn't know what else to do with that. But as I looked at her, I was like, this is a character, like horses are prey animals, right? They are not hunters. But they are very big and powerful. So I wanted to lean into the aspect of that she's a prey animal. She's preyed upon by her boss or the main villain. And as he's constantly verbally assaulting her and insulting her and shaming her for who she is and how she shows up in the world, she makes herself small, right? She puts her head down. In all of the early scenes of the book, you see her cringing from him. and he never physically harms her. He's just verbally very abusive to her. The way classic villains, of the examples I was using, like Otis and Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor says exactly zero nice things about Otis in all the appearances in the Superman movies, right? But all of this shaming and making her feel small has got to have a release valve someplace. And that's where her barbarian nature comes out in the fact that she pushes all of that rage out towards everybody else. So she acts badly because she's treated horribly. And this is one of those like ideas I like to play with in all of my comics, is that I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time around the notion of like, oh, every villain has a good reason, because sometimes people are just creepy people, it seems. And I don't want to justify horrendous acts, but as somebody who works with children, a sort of principle that I live by is sometimes people who act the worst need our help the most. And borrowing that language exactly from a He-Man episode. Word for word, Orko said that, right? And so like when I see a student acting in a way that feels a little antisocial, it is not my instinct to shame them, punish them, call them out, or try to make them feel small, but to try to figure out like, okay, what's going on here? Where are you at today? What do you need right now? It's not always easy to do it, but it's something I feel that it's important to do. And I wanted a character to do this with. I wanted a character who acts very badly. She's a very frightening villain in the story. There's some panels that I drew where I was like, ooh, she's... this is making me feel a little nervous looking at her coming at them, this giant horse with clubs all over her body. But I also wanted there to be something beyond the fact that she's a thug. She's a thug who is very vulnerable and tender, and she's paired with a guy who sort of shakes the soda bottle and uses that to spray her rage on everybody else. Now, where did that come from? Well, if we get into a personal area, as I've often described myself as a sensitive child when I was growing up. I wasn't a timid kid. I liked to be creative and to perform for other people. But I was very sensitive to what was happening around me. And in the early 80s, in a rural community where masculinity was often described to me as, or at least the way I received it was, it's being physically powerful and using that power to overcome other people. Being top dog, quote unquote, meant that like there's a pile of people underneath you. Not that we were being encouraged to like physically maim or murder anybody, but we were encouraged to, like, if you were the toughest kid on the football team, that was a good thing. And this is a long time ago. This is the early 80s. If sometimes when fights would break out on the playground, like the supervisors would be like, well, you know, be a man. Be a man about it. Why are you so scared of this? When the fights got, there were times where the teachers intervened, of course. I don't really feel like I was surrounded by irresponsible people. I'm trying to describe there was a cultural expectation that physical conflict is something boys do. And for better or worse, that's where we are. And as a sensitive kid who didn't like hurting people, I felt really bewildered by this. And when I did get bullied and physically, bumped around by other kids, it made me feel like this weird cocktail of anger, fear, resentment, shame. And I didn't know what to do with any of that. And I think that's why those experiences stayed with me for so long and why I feel like I want to address them through my art, because it was profoundly confusing for, 8 to 12 year old Jersey to be in this space where other kids are going to come up to you and they're just going to punch you. And if you ask why, which I did, I was like, why did you, what was that for? And like, they would say something silly, like you're wearing a calculator watch and only rich kids have calculator watches, right? At the time I was confused because, well, now I'm feeling ashamed because I'm being called out for something I didn't know I should be ashamed of. I feel ashamed because I was scared when that kid was hurting me. I'm ashamed because, or I feel small because the adults in the room don't seem to really want to do anything about this, at least not to my satisfaction. And like confusion because like does that mean that if I got big enough and strong enough, like the expectation is that I'm going to do that to other kids? And as I described in some of my other microcasts, I tried it. I hated it. So all of this like is still very much alive in me. All of those feelings of confusion and bewilderment and sadness and shame and hurt and so on. And in retrospect, as I got older and thankfully a little bit more mature, I realized when that kid roughed me up for wearing a calculator watch, that was some shame that was coming through him that I didn't know what to do with. I didn't have the presence, the intellect to understand what dynamic was at work there, which was like going back, if I was an adult in the room, I might try to like sort that out with them. Where's that coming from? Kid who was hitting people versus kid who's getting hit. Let's try to find a way to like navigate this landscape together. And that's why I'm making this book, or that's one of the reasons I'm making this book. So I wanted a character to sort of, in a very real sense, Wilhelmina is the most autobiographical character in the book for me. I feel the most connected to what she's going through in the story from the standpoint of like what I was going through as a 10, 11-year-old kid. So, and while I didn't necessarily act rageful and destructive, there was a lot of unmodulated emotion that I expressed back then. I was a very emotionally fragile kid because of this, because I was trying to grapple with all this stuff. So, okay, personal stuff aside, why a horse? Why make her a horse? Well, these are ideas that occurred to me long after the book was underway. A lot of it was instinct. A lot of it was, I want to do it because I think it's neat. It'll be fun. And then it was like, congratulations, Jersey, you got a book contract. You get to draw a horse 1,000 times. Oh, no. I'm not great at drawing horses. Well, I guess I'm going to be better at drawing horses after a little while. But as I was drawing the book, these kinds of thoughts occurred to me. It's like, you know, horses, like I said, they're prey animals. But they're animals that really prize their freedom, right? Nobody talks about taming a horse. Like in the old cowboy movies, they talk about breaking the horse. You break them. You break their spirit to make them your partner. And to me, that says like, oh my gosh, they must really love freedom. They love it so much that you have to break their spirit in order to get them to cooperate with you. Holy moly. And that's certainly in the book, at least implicitly, with the fact that Gallus Lugubrious like is constantly smashing the spirit of this poor barbarian horse to keep her in line. They're beautiful. And I mean, like horses are like truly beautiful animals. Like there's a reason that like horse fiction is a thing, right? They're majestic and they're powerful and they're terrifyingly powerful. I know plenty of people who, when I say, hey, let's go horseback riding, not that I say that a lot, but I have said it, will say like, oh no, I'm not getting on a horse. Are you kidding me? Those things are dangerous. They're huge. They're very big and powerful. And that beautiful, majestic, almost, I would say, maybe sublime is too strong of a word, but it's something akin to that. It's the kind of beauty that comes from something that is so powerful that it can like undo you, right? So they're big, they're beautiful, they're scary, they love their freedom. All of that I thought was like, that's great that you have this character who is so tender and so fragile and so frightened, but and so unmodulated that when she shows up, she's like twice as dangerous, right? But finally, let me close with the silly sort of origin of the character, which was, I mean, as I was sorting out what the book could be, this would have been like around like 2020, I just thought, wouldn't it be neat to explore how a horse could move in my anthropomorphic world if she was a barbarian? Meaning she's not going to use swords necessarily. She's going to use something more blunt, like big clubs with spikes on it. bones, right? A big old club made out of like a dinosaur femur kind of thing. Something blunt and something brutal is what kind of weapon this character would use. And but then I thought, it's not like a hard and fast rule. I don't have a list of rules of my anthropomorphic world. I really go by like what my gut says. So that's why you can have a character like Dr. Bear, who is literally a teddy bear with a blue suit from our world, standing alongside of a horse barbarian, or like Boulder from Boulder and Fleet is in there, who is a polar-ish bear who walks around on his hind legs all the time like a person, but he still has bear hands and feet. He doesn't have like people hands. Like that, I think that's the only rule I have, is I don't want to like anthropomorphize to the point of like Disney's Robin Hood or Zootopia, where like they have like real people hands. Like they have to have like their original animal appendages. But with a horse, it's like, okay, well, I don't want her to clomp around on her hind legs and use her front hooves like hands. She's going to walk on all fours. So how would a barbarian work like that? It was just a little thought experiment. I was like, okay, well, how would I arrange her clubs and bones on her so that when she jumps and like twists, the clubs will swing and hit people? So she literally has to like swing around her rear end to get the clubs all moving to nail somebody, right? That I thought was a fun thought experiment for a static medium like comics. This would probably work better in animation. But I was like, can I do it in comics? And I drew the character and I was like, that's a really cool design. I like that design. I'm happy with what I did. And then, like I said, congratulations, you're going to draw the whole book now. Oh, that's going to be hard. And it was. It was, while I feel the most personal connection to that character in the book, she was the hardest to draw for a variety of reasons. First, I wasn't good at drawing horses. Secondly, a lot of the poses I wanted her to be in were very challenging to capture, and they weren't things that I could necessarily just look up reference on. I'd have to look up, like, you know, I don't know, as close as I could get to that and then figure it out the rest of the way. So, and then also, I mean, the bony sort of the jawbone she wears over her face, which conceals a lot of her feelings, I feel like was a really, in retrospect, an intuitive move, because she's also somebody who is relatively guarded, right? She makes herself small. She hides when Gallus Lugubrious is being cruel to her. So even her face, which has this ferocious bone jaw, pointy teeth thing on it, also hides the timid little girl inside who just needs somebody to say, you know, I see you, I hear you. So that's Wilhelmina. And if this was at all interesting to you, I hope you will order the book, The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue, where you can read all about Wilhelmina. What I haven't shared at all was any spoilers regarding what happens to her in the end of the book. So you can pre-order it now at the time of this recording. If you're listening to this after September of 2024, it's in stores now. You can go get it at your comic store. You can order it, you know, on various online places where people sell books. You know, independent bookstores are good, though. That's a good place to get a book. I like it when people do that a lot. But drbear.com, B-A-E-R. Switch those two vowels from an English spelling to the German spelling of the word bear. And it's D-O-C-T-O-R, all spelled out. Or you can find it on my website, jdros.com. You know what? There's links in the description of this microcast as well. So you can open up your device that you're listening on and find the information there. Okay. Thank you for listening. Thanks to everybody who has pre-ordered the book. It means a lot to me. And I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
Today, I want to talk to you about courage. Now, courage not only means being brave in the face of danger, it also means having the strength to say no when your friends are trying to talk you into doing something you know is wrong. In short, courage means having principles and sticking to them, no matter what. See you all again soon.